Appreciate seeing so many people, both in here and out in the parking lot. And I am aware of the time. As we've been doing, we've been trying to kind of include some discussion. I am going to save discussion to the very end. I've had some other places I'll allow for discussion, but to kind of speed things along a little bit, I'm going to cut out some places I had. But other than that, I do want to definitely cover this. We are going to start this Sunday, and for the next several Sundays, kind of a new, I don't know, series, for lack of a better word. We've been talking about Proverbs, been going through various keywords in Proverbs and what they mean. This week and into about the middle of March, we're going to be taking a look at some of the key speeches or key sermons that are located in the New Testament. Some of these were given by Jesus, some by Peter, some by Paul. Next week, I believe, Adam is going to be talking about some things that John the Baptist said, sort of sermons that John the Baptist had related to Christ coming. And so that's what we're going to be doing over the next, 10 weeks or so. Today, I'm going to go back a little bit further in time, and I'm going to look at this sermon or speech that was just read to us by Mike in Joshua chapter 24. And right off the bat, I want to go ahead and make sure that I mention that as I look at this, there are three key things that sort of stuck out to me as maybe critical lessons that we should gather from what Joshua had to say. So if you don't remember anything else, number one, I think that he focused on the importance of remembering what God has done for us. And I think that's a critical lesson for the Israelites he was talking to, and it's an important lesson for us today. Number two, the power of leading by example. And then the third thing, and maybe the most critical thing, is the need to actively choose to follow God and not other gods. And so those are the three key things that I got, at least out of this speech by Joshua. Now, first of all, I want to sort of set the stage a little bit. And at the very start of this, in Joshua 24:1, it said, "Then Joshua assembled all the tribes of Israel at Shechem." So this is referring back really to chapter 23. What had happened in chapter 23? He had gathered the leaders together, and he had talked to them. And verse 23:3 said, "You yourselves have seen everything the Lord your God has done to all these nations for your sake. It was the Lord your God who fought for you." So Joshua now has gathered all the Israelite people together, and he's reminded them, at least in the previous chapter, and this is something that would have been mindful of the people that were there, of all the things that God had done during their lifetime. If you're there at the end of the book of Joshua, the events in the book of Joshua had taken place over a 20 to 30 year period, not a very long period of time. So if you look back through the book of Joshua, you had in chapter 1 Moses dying and Joshua taking over. You had Rahab and the spies in chapter 2. You had crossing the Jordan River in chapter 3. Jump ahead a little bit. You had the defeat at Jericho, where the walls miraculously tumbled over. You had chapter 10, right, where the sun stood still as the fighting went on and on and on. And we don't know really how long it was, but it was a much longer than normal day. You had the dividing up of the land, chapters 13 through 22, the 12 tribes getting their places, all that kind of stuff. If you're there listening to Joshua in chapter 24, you would have remembered these things. It would have been stuff that you would recall very, very easily. And it would be, I kind of went back, if we go back 30 years, that's 1990, we had Iraq invaded Kuwait in 1991, then we had the Gulf War, we had the collapse of the Soviet Union. Many of us remember that. Holland, I know, remembers that. Maybe not. But even people that are younger remember things that happened, say, 10 years ago. 10 years ago, we had the death of Osama bin Laden, etc. So these are things that people would have remembered. And Joshua doesn't spend a lot of time on them. He did in chapter 3 say, remember those things that you saw with your own eyes. But what does he do in this speech in chapter 24? He goes back further in history. And he says that there's all these other things that have happened that maybe you don't remember as well, but are also very, very important. And that brings me then to what I said was the first key lesson from this, is the idea of remembering what God has done for us. Looking back, not just us personally, but that does include that, but also what God has done for his people throughout history. And that's exactly what Joshua has done in this account. And I do think that, and obviously I'm a little bit biased based on my career, but I think that you know, history is important. One of the things I always say, you know, it's nice if I can learn from my mistakes, but it's even better if I can learn from somebody else's mistakes. And that's a big part of what we do, studying history. We look at trends. We look at what's happened in the past. We get some perspective. I'm not a historian, but I taught history for over 25 years, and I see the importance, the significance of it. And the word itself, history, it comes from a Greek word, historia, and that means to find out, to learn from a narrative, to learn from somebody telling you. It's a Greek word, so back in Greek times, they didn't have history books. They had people tell them, hey, this happened, this happened, this happened. The easy translation I like to consider is his story. Right? So as a history teacher, I was a storyteller. I told stories, right? This happened, then this happened, then this happened, then this happened, and test is tomorrow. So that's sort of the process. So Joshua is going to say, remember all these stories of the past, all these events of the past, all these things that maybe you didn't personally live through, but your ancestors did. And that's what he does at the very start of this speech. So he gathers them together in verse 1, and then he gives them a history of God's dealings with Abraham in verse 2 and 3. He deals with Isaac and Jacob and Esau in verse 4. Verses 5 and 6, he reminds them about Moses and Aaron and what happened in Egypt. He talks about the judgment on the Egyptians in verse 7 and reminds them what happened to the Egyptian army at the Red Sea. He talks about the defeat of the Amorites in verse 8. So he goes back to this long ago history, and then he brings them up to events that had happened again during their lifetimes, or at least many of their lifetimes, depending on what their exact age was this time. And I like in verse 11, which Mike just read, he mentions the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Hivites, the Jebusites. Those are words I can read, and I understand those were different people, and I could probably spend some time and look and see where they were located. But again, if you're sitting listening to Joshua as he gave this, those were people you would have remembered these things. Oh yeah, the Jebusites, those are the guys that wear those weird hairdos, or those are the guys that had the funky, you know, purple shoes, or whatever it was. These were things they would have definitely known what he was talking about. And so he goes back to this ancient history. Now I read the Jebusites, the Hittites, etc. To me, that's ancient history. But it's that reminding of what God has done. And that's critical. And we see this a lot. We go back even before this. Deuteronomy, the first four chapters of Deuteronomy, Moses is looking back at previous events that had happened. If we fast forward to the New Testament, in Acts chapter 7, we have Stephen's famous speech that he makes before he's killed. And in chapter 7 of Acts, he is reviewing events from the Old Testament and the Israelites' response during that time. In a few weeks, Andy's going to talk about Acts chapter 10, and in there, Peter is talking to Cornelius, and what does he do? He goes back and gives a summary of events of the life of Jesus. So this looking back is something that we see numerous times in the Bible, and I think what Joshua is telling us here is that we ourselves have to do this. We have to spend time, physically sit down and read the Word, and remind ourselves of the promises that God made and the promises that God kept. We have to remind ourselves of the power of God and the influence that He's had throughout history. And I also think it's important that we can look at our own lives and we can see times that God's impacted our own lives, whether that's be prayers that were answered or decisions that we made, maybe decisions we made that weren't good decisions, and we can see sort of the impact that had. Or good decisions, and I know we're not puppets. I know we have free will. I know that you know our lives are not ordained. This will happen. This will happen. This will happen, and controlled. You know, by like we're on a string. But I do definitely believe that there's opportunities we have that are placed before us, and how we respond to those are important. I many times think about when I graduated from college and I'm looking for a job. I had two job offers. I had a contract in my hand for in a suburb of Chicago and a contract in my hand for a suburb in Kansas City. And I came to Blue Springs and I met Melissa and she introduced me to the Lord and here I am. And I'm convinced that if I'd gone to Chicago, I I definitely wouldn't be here. I don't know how I would have gotten here. It would have been a long drive. But I my life would be very, very different. And I think that's a way where God placed an opportunity in front of me. And fortunately, I made the right choice. So I think it's important for us that we look back at what God has done for us and what God has done throughout history for his people. The second critical lesson I get out of this is the power of leading by example. The power of sort of showing people the right way to go. And in verse 15, which is printed in the bulletin, verse 15, Joshua discusses worshiping other gods, which I'm going to get to here in just a minute. But notice what he says at the very end of that verse. He says, "But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord." So he says, "You know, here's my decision. Here's what we're going to do." And then look what happens right at the very start of verse 16. The people answered, "Far be it from us to forsake the Lord to serve other gods." Right? So Joshua's leadership, I'm sure, had a role in that decision. If Joshua had sort of ended his speech at that point, and you know, if we stop it, say, at verse 14, and then Joshua said, "Hey, thanks for coming, drive safe, see you later," then maybe a lot of the people would say, "Yeah, that was okay. I wasn't real impressed. His PowerPoint wasn't that nice," whatever. And they would have done whatever. But Joshua very clearly said, "I am going to follow the Lord." And the people in verse 16 said, "Well, we're going to follow the Lord too." So I think that power of example, that idea of very clearly showing what's right is critical. We see this all the time. People tend to follow what others are doing. That's one reason why crowds can be so dangerous. That's one reason why people can be influenced. One of the best examples of people sort of noticing your actions and following them is I'm looking at all these kids, and I'm looking at all these people that have kids, right? Kids mimic their parents. I remember distinctly when one of my kids was a toddler, they were looking at a book sitting on the floor in the living room, and they were licking their fingers to turn the page. The funny thing was, they were licking their fingers on their left hand, and they were turning the page with the right hand. All right? They didn't have a clue why they were doing it, but they'd seen mom and dad lick their fingers and turn pages. So I'm going to lick fingers and turn pages. They're going to follow what they see. So our kids follow what they see us do. Well, we should be then giving them good examples. But it's not just our kids. It's other people's kids. It's other people that we interact with, right? If one of our jobs, which I think it is to share the gospel, then we should be always leading in an example that would make people want to follow, right? In other words, how am I going to share the gospel with a coworker if that coworker knows I lie on my expense reports every month to get extra money, right? How is my classmate at school going to kind of believe me when I talk to them about God when they know I cheat on all the tests? How is my next-door neighbor going to respond when I try to tell them how they should live a godly life when they see me always arguing with that other neighbor over how they park their car in front of my house or whatever silly things neighbors argue about? All right? So this leading by example is very important, not just within our family, not just within the body here, but within the world. 1 Peter 2, 19 through 17 talks about how we're supposed to be a peculiar people, right? How we're supposed to stand out from society. We can't be a shining light in the world if we're as dull as everybody else, right? We need to lead by example, just like Joshua did. So that's the second key thing. Again, the importance of looking back at the history of what God has done for us and his people. Number two, the power of leading by example. And the third, and I think by far the most critical point of this talk, is the need to actively choose to follow God and not follow other gods. And we see this very clearly. Again, 24:15, it's the verse that was printed in the bulletin. He starts out in that verse. It says, "But if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve." So verse 15 to me is kind of interesting. He's not really saying you should choose between good and evil, right? He's kind of already covered that. What he's saying is if you're not up to following God, then pick who you're going to follow But it really doesn't matter, right? He says you can go back and follow the old gods, you know, that your forefathers did on the other side of the river, or you can follow the gods of the Amorites. But either way, it's a lose, right? It's if you're not going to serve God, who you serve instead is irrelevant because it's the wrong choice. That to me is what he's saying in 24:15. It's like a true false test, right? One of the things you learn as a kid is true false test. If any part of the statement is false, then it's got to be false. Well, if any part of that God is false, then it's a false God. And if you're going to follow a false God, then you're doomed. And so that's the statement that Joshua is making. And that's important because as humans, we're really good at rationalizing. Right? We're really good at coming up with excuses to do things that we want to do. Right? Lying is terribly wrong, but a little white lie, well, maybe that's okay. Here's a history lesson for you. We used to have a thing called basket dinners. Right? Maybe some of you remember those. And one of the things that we had there, you always had the dessert table. Right? That's the best table as far as I was concerned. That's where all the goodies were. But it's kind of like the idea of going up to the dessert table and saying, I'm going to eat the healthiest thing that's there for me. So you got this whole table that's full of sugar and calories, and oh, look, that one's got a little bit of fruit in it. Right? I'm going to eat a whole bunch of that because that's healthy. That's kind of the idea here. So here's all these gods. Here's all these false ideas. But this one looks like it's maybe not as bad as some of the others, so that's the one I'm going to jump on. I'm going to follow that particular idea. So Joshua is saying, again, you have a choice. You can choose the real God, or you can pick any of the false gods out there, and it's going to be a bad decision. And again, this is not a new concept. I'll go back to Deuteronomy once again. Moses, in chapter 6 of Deuteronomy, verses 13 through 15, says, "Fear the Lord your God, serve him only, and take your oaths in his name. Do not follow other gods, the gods of the peoples around you. For the Lord your God, who is among you, is a jealous God, and his anger will burn against you, and he will destroy you from the face of the land." Very similar to the statements that Joshua is making here in chapter 24. Unfortunately, this is not a concept that ended with Joshua. Right? If we look forward in Jeremiah 11:13 says, "You have as many gods as you have towns, O Judah, and the altars you have set up to burn incense to the shameful god Baal here are as many as the streets of Jerusalem." So even after these warnings, people have turned to all kinds of different gods. And we have tons of examples. If you go through the Old Testament, they talk about Ashtoreth, they talk about Baal, they talk about Dagon, they talk about Molech. There's lots and lots and lots of false gods that were out there that the people turned to at various times. This is not a thing that ended in the Old Testament. In the New Testament, Paul, 1 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 4 through 6. "So then about eating food sacrificed to idols, we know that an idol is nothing at all in the world, and that there is no God but one. For even if there are so-called gods, whether in heaven or on earth, as indeed there are many gods and many lords, yet for us there is but one God, the Father, from whom all things came and for whom we live. And there is but one Lord, Jesus Christ, through whom all things come and through whom we live." So even though there's only one true God, people identify with other gods. And in the New Testament, just like the Old, they mention Hermes and Zeus are specifically mentioned in Acts chapter 14. Acts chapter 17, Paul famously talks about the unknown God. They have so many gods, they've even got an idol for one that they're not sure who it is. And again, this is something that continues to this day. There's lots of false gods that can be fallen. As I drove here today, I went by a building full of people that instead of basing their ideas on the Bible, they based it on a book written by some man in the 1800s. I went by another building that instead of following what it says in the book, they also follow rules established over years of traditions by some guy in Rome. I went by another building that doesn't believe that baptism is the immersion in water for the remission of sins. I went by buildings that don't have communion because, well, it's not important. We don't have time. I would argue that all of those have taken the true God and the worship that's supposed to be there, and they said, we're going to modify it a little bit. We're going to find something that we think is acceptable, And I would argue that therefore they're following a false god. But I'm not here to bash other people. This is something that can be a danger for us. Right? I could sit here every Sunday, every Wednesday, but I could not be paying attention. I could go through the motions and then go out in the world and do all kinds of terrible things that are not showing a worshipful attitude to God. Right? I'm not saying, well, these people in this place are terrible, rotten people, and I'm glad we're not like them. What I'm saying is, in the world today, there's lots of other gods out there. There's lots of other beliefs out there, and we have to be careful that we stay to the truth. Joshua saw the danger in this. In verses 19 and 20, which again Mike read to us a little bit ago, he pointed out the difficulty in serving God. Right? We have to stay on the path, just like Joshua was telling them. And we know that the Israelites that Joshua spoke to failed, right? What's the very next book? Judges. And what does Judges talk about? This cycle that they went through. Follow these false gods, do all these terrible things. Again, this is not something that ended at that time. Matthew chapter 6, verse 24 says, "No one can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." You can get so focused on riches of this world and desires of this world that you fall away from what the Lord would want you to do. Hebrews 3 and 12 says, "See to it, brothers, that none of you has a sinful, unbelieving heart that turns away from the living God." He's speaking to brothers who could turn away from God because of whatever it might be, whether it be money, fame, power, inconvenience, whatever it might be. So Joshua here is telling the Israelite people that we need to look back, we need to remember what's God done for us, we need to be willing to serve by example and show others the right way to do things, and we need to be constantly vigilant to avoid falling to false gods. At this point, I will open it up. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Okay, thank you. Time constraint issues. I had hoped for a little bit more discussion, but anyway. So Joshua emphasizes those three things. We see, again, as I already pointed out, in the book of Judges, that very quickly people didn't do what they said they were going to do. They followed false gods, caused lots of trouble, and again, this is something that definitely goes on today. Joshua did say in 24:15, and Andy mentioned this when he did the table talk, "As for me and my household, we will serve the Lord." If you're here this morning and you are ready to make that same commitment, we now offer the invitation. Whether it's your first time you've heard the word and are ready to repent of your sins and be immersed in the waters of baptism for the remission of your sins, or if you've been a Christian who has turned away from God, as mentioned in Hebrews 3:12, if there's any way this congregation can help you get back on the right track, please come forward as we stand and sing.